What up, meepsters? This is Ryan Rainbro, and if you're hearing this, that means you're about to listen to one of the 99 free episodes of the Meep Meep Podcast, available wherever you cast pods. But keep in mind that there are new and unreleased episodes of the show on patreon.com/meepmeeppod. So you'll want to sign up there to hear future episodes and also other side projects like Choo Choo, the show about soundtracks, and contribute suggestions for future episodes as well. Will I listen to your suggestion? There's only one way to find out. patreon.com/meepmeeppod. Bye! What up, meepsters? I'm Ryan Rainbro from television, and this is Meep Meep, the podcast about albums released on Roadrunner Records. And you know, it's often said that men are constantly thinking about the Roman Empire, but I'm here to tell you they got it wrong. They got close, but they got it wrong, because actually, what everybody's always thinking about is Through the Ashes of Empires, Machine Head's fifth album, released in 2003 or 2004, depending on where you live. And that's what we're here to discuss today with none other than Phil Demmel, who was the guitar player for Machine Head for a very long time, including, but not limited to, and starting with, Through the Ashes of Empires. Now, Through the Ashes of Empires is a huge album for not only me and you, but also for Machine Head, because it follows up the supposedly much maligned 2001 Supercharger album, which I love. Okay, let me let you know, that's a good one. And, you know, it's said that it's maligned, but let me tell you, when I went to the Road Rage tour with Chimera and El Nino and Fear Factory, we were aligned, baby, all right? When I went to the Year of the Dragon tour with Reveille and Primer 55, we were in alignment. So I think this malignment is yalion, and that almost works. But the point is that the album was very popular at the time. White Knuckle Blackout, big single. Crashing Around You, big single. However, it does come out in 2001, which also has September 11th, 2001 also comes out in 2001, which of course affects our country in the United States and in the world very dramatically, but the music industry is impacted by it severely. And so that being said, Machine Head kind of wanted another shot at Supercharger getting the credit that it deserved. And so they go to Roadrunner, and Roadrunner Records is like, hey, we're going to relaunch the record. We're going to try to put this out again for you to try to really get all we can from this album. But that never happens. And as a result, Machine Head, Rob Flynn, being frustrated with Roadrunner Records, requests to be released from their record contract early. Because at this point, like I said, they've only put out four albums. And it's probably like a seven-album deal, because that's how Roadrunner worked back then. And maybe still works now, if they work at all. So Roadrunner obliges. They say, hey, that's fine. Go. Peace. Reese's Pieces, they say. Which is a weird thing to say, but they said it. All right? And around this same time, Aru Luster, who played guitar on one of the greatest albums of all time, The Burning Red, and another one of the greatest albums of all time, Supercharger, leaves Machine Head. And he goes and joins other meepsters, El Nino, and is still in a band with members of that band called Lions at the Gate. Now, why didn't they call their band Still Nino? I don't know, okay? They didn't consult me, but they should have, and there's still time. So Aru Luster leaves. Rob Flynn, Adam Deuce, Dave McLean continue on as a trio, and they're going to write a new record, and they're going to try to get a new record deal. Now, you might be wondering, well, hey, aren't we talking about an album that was released on Roadrunner Records? Yes, they get back on Roadrunner Records to release the record. You don't know what you got till it's gone, baby. All right? So in between them leaving Roadrunner Records and rejoining Roadrunner Records, like I said, Aru Luster leaves, and that leaves a vacant guitar player spot. Enter Phil Demmel. Now, at this point, a certified guitar legend, recently announced as part of Kerry King from Slayer's new project. Awesome. Recently also played guitar for Lamb of God. Sick. And before Machine Head, played guitar with Rob Flynn in Violence. And up until very recently, even including while we did this interview, Phil was still in Violence, but he just in February of 2024 played his final shows for now with them. But 2003, 2004, he's just starting his Machine Head journey, and that's what we're talking about. So the album comes out in 2003 in Europe on Roadrunner Records, and then in 2004 in the United States on Roadrunner Records. So this is kind of a 20th anniversary celebration, depending on how you look at it. No matter what, when you're listening to this, it's 20. Okay, so grab a candle, put it in a cupcake, and listen to the story of this record. Now, the album artwork, actually, for Through the Ashes of Empires, it's photography from the Bonaventure Cemetery in Savannah, Georgia, which I recently visited. Beautiful. You know what else is from Savannah? Forrest Gump, if you want to go see the bench and the statue. See the bench from Forrest Gump, then go see the statue from Through the Ashes of Empires. They're quite the companion pieces. And largely this album is produced by Rob Flynn of Machine Head, but there is some pre-production done by Andy Sneap, who you may remember Rob and I discussing on the More Things Change album. So keeping it in the family there. But that's just a little background info to get you primed for this conversation with Phil that I know you're going to enjoy, because it's awesome. He shares some really cool stories, including but not limited to his time trying out for legendary Meepsters Sepultura to fill their vacant vocal spot back in 97, 98 before Derek Green and the Against record was unleashed upon the world. So without further ado, I bring you Phil Demmel. Didn't you try out for vocals for Sepultura?
Oh, I did. Yeah, Loose. It was a song audition. Yeah, I did.
So I've talked to lots of people that tried out for Sepultura, which is a funny thing to say. And did you actually go to Brazil, or you like recorded something and sent it to them?
No, I was, Machine Head might have actually been in at Fantasy Studios recording The More Things Change or something, and Borovoy was there, and I was giving him a ride to the airport, and he had said, hey, they're auditioning people, they've got a guy, you know, Derek was already there, they've got a guy that they really like and they'll probably use, but you know, it wouldn't hurt for you to, and I wasn't doing anything at the time, I was in a band called Torque playing kind of locally, we did a record, and was pretty much wrapping up what I was doing at the time. And so, yeah, go. You're singing and playing guitar. It'd be an interesting, you know, fit. And so they had a song called Choke off that first record that he did. And they had music to it that they sent out. They're like, oh, here's the song. Write lyrics, record over the top, and just as an audition. So I went into a local, went in with James Murphy, actually, the guitar player, and recorded with him, and came up with some lyrics, and, you know, came up with what I came up with for that time.
Wow, that's crazy. So James Murphy, like, were you in Florida? Or no, you said you were in California. So he was not there?
He lived in Oakland for a while. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a recording studio here. He played in Testament for a minute and was in the area for a while. And James is a really good dude. He recorded a Torque demo for us. And while I was here, he was a good dude to us. I like James Murphy.
Yeah, no, I mean, legendary guitar player, especially in my world, as far as like, I mean, he was on lots of Roadrunner albums on those early death metal years.
Right.
Well, that's crazy. So do you, you had to write, they didn't have the song written. You wrote your own lyrics and vocal patterns and everything for it? They just sent you the music?
Yeah, they just had the music. They're all put down some lyrics and, you know, write some lyrics and sing it how you're hearing it. And it was a different structure. There's a weird, if you've heard the song or if you know the song, you know there's this weird long structure in the middle where Andreas is just doing some guitar noodling for a minute. So it had this weird bridge in it, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah, you know what's interesting that you just pointed out that should have been obvious to me is I didn't even consider the fact that it would have made more sense because you already played guitar and sang. Because I just am so used to thinking of the dynamic now with Derek, where he's like a standalone vocalist. Well, I guess he plays like
random guitar sometimes.
But but yeah, going from Max with the guitar. Well, that's really interesting. And because you sang and played guitar in Torque, right? That wasn't like it was like something you were doing.
It was something that I was doing. Yeah, yeah. So it was. I think they said that I was too, like maybe I was too 80s or I was too old school or something like that. And I got it. You know, I got it. Chuck Billy had tried out for them.
Right.
And I think that James might have recorded him too, because I think he did Slave New World as another song as an audition, and James had played me that. I think Steve Esquivel from Skin Lab tried out all, and I think they all recorded with James there at his studio there in Oakland. So you hear everybody's different take on the song and everybody's different, you know, how they sang it and where they sang over parts. So I think that somebody put mine up on YouTube. So it's up there somewhere.
Hearing Chuck Billy sing Slave New World would be very funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. I think Testament was in a weird time at that point. And, it was the '90s, man. It was weird for everybody. So
yeah. Yeah. No, it was a crazy time for the whole world, especially in heavy music. So that's cool though. I appreciate you, you telling me about that, but yes. So fast forward a couple years later, not to paraphrase too much, but you were in Violence. Of course you were in Violence with Rob years prior to you joining Machine Head. Mm-hmm. Violence was essentially disbanded, right? And Torque was more or less Violence without Sean.
Yeah. Sean had, you know, the recording five Violence, the classic lineup. Rob quit to start Machine Head. Perry quit to jam with Billy Milano and Bobby Gustafson. And so we had a couple of members, Ray Vegas on guitar and Mark Hernandez came in to play drums. That was the last formation of Violence. We did some stuff and Thrash was just, it was done in the Bay Area, you know, and Sean was getting married. He was quitting music. So we were like, we're not going to do Violence without Sean. We're done. You know, but we had written some songs and we were down tuned, you know, and what everybody was doing at the time. And so we had these songs that were just like, well, we want to keep playing the remaining four of us. I wanted to sing. That's what, you know, everybody was doing at the time, four piece, you know. I was going to give it a shot at singing because I had sang on the demos that we did of these songs with Sean. Had a couple of lead parts for me that I was doing. So I was going to dip my toes into trying singing. So we scrapped his vocals on these demo songs. We came up with the name Torque, and it's essentially the last Violence lineup with me singing on it became Torque.
You said you just played locally and just put out a record locally for a couple of years and then.
Yeah, we did local shows. Did pretty good, you know, just on the strength of Violence alone, what we were doing. And we got signed. We put a record out. We went over, played the Dynamo Festival over in Holland, and came back, and it just got to the, they did, I don't think that Mascot picked up the option or the communication. We were all doing stuff, business by fax at this point, you know.
Right.
So it's for the curly pages to come up and, you know, the old dial tone from the Pink Floyd song, you know, it's just like, you know, talking at 4 a.m, whatever. And through the miscommunication, we got to the point where it's just like, we did another demo. The songs were really strong, but I just, you know, I had just gotten married for the first time at the, and it was just like, I don't want to be the, here's my demo dude, you know, or I just was done. I was ready to walk away from, you know, I was married, just bought a house. I was, you know, snowboarding and golfing and playing basketball. And I was just it was just time for me to be away from music for a bit. So, just kind of walked away, 1997.
We'll be back after a quick break. If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Right, so 1997, then fast forward to what, 2001, 2002, Violence is kind of reuniting to more formally break up?
Yeah, so this is, in 1999, I get a call from my cousin who this is the internet, you know, all the startups were happening in Silicon Valley here. And so he's working for this startup, and there's a guy working there, his name's Steve Machado, and he's taking all these old thrash records and, you know, Pro Tools is new, you know, and so he's remixing all these things and singing original songs over the music from the time. And so he calls me to hear it and he wants to start recording some original music. So I'm like, yeah, I could throw some riffs your way. He can loop them and do whatever. And the songs become pretty strong and he's got a really cool, unique phrasing and structuring and tone to his voice. And so we're incorporating different elements. He buys a D drum, an electronic kid is new at this point, so I bring in the chork drummer Mark in, and we start writing music, man, and we form this band called Technocracy. And he had a ton of money, so he's pouring it all into live show. We've got moving lights when nobody has moving lights at this point, but our whole show's running on MIDI. We've got strobes and lights and shit going on and samples and, you know, not an arena show, but a theater show packed into these clubs. And so develop a strong local following and do a record. Chuck Billy gets sick from Testament. Chuck from Death gets sick. You know, there's this big benefit getting put together locally to get Death Angel back together, get Forbidden back together. Anthrax is coming out, MOD's coming out, or SOD's coming out to play. Will Violence get back together and do this benefit for the Chucks? You know, and you know, we're all on board. And I think that our bass player Dean was not going to be in town, or so I hit up Jason Newstead to play bass for us, you know, and he only wanted to play bass for us if Rob was going to be there and if we were going to be the original Violence with Jason playing with us. And Rob was not available at that point. I think that they were down in South America, so Machine Head wasn't going to be there. And or maybe he's getting married or something. And so Violence gets back together and it's a big deal. And, you know, the show's amazing and there's an amazing response. And we're all like, wow, let's see if it was just this, or let's try to do a headlining show. And we put tickets on sale. It sells out in hours, you know? And so Violence is doing this little reunion thing in 2002, 2001 and two. And, you know, it was fun for a minute.
And during that time, Adam Deuce from Machine Head ends up playing with you guys also.
Yeah. So in 2002, Violence is playing. 2001 is the end of the benefit. We get together for the first time. We go on a West Coast tour with Testament and Halford supporting them. We're doing some local shows. It spills in 2002. And Machine Head needs a guitar player because they've lost their guitar player. They have 2 weeks worth of run to do. I step in to do that. Me and Adam, we're always friendly, but it was, you know, the summer of 2002, we get an offer to play the Milwaukee Metal Fest, which is in at the end of the summer, and Dean can't make it. So it's just like, hey, Adam, you know, he's always a Violence fan. And, you know, do you want to play bass for Violence at this show? And so he steps up and plays bass for us. It was pretty cool.
Does that predate you playing those that run of shows with Machine Head after Aru leaves?
No. So I play with Machine Head first in the summer of 2002. Then Adam plays with Violence later on that year, like whenever Milwaukee Metal Fest is. I think it's in maybe late August or September. So it was before. So I'd already played with Machine Head as a temporary fill-in. The idea was that I was going to the way that I made this all right with my then wife was like, she didn't want me to tour. So she agrees for me to go on this tour because I'd be missing her birthday and our anniversary at this time. And for a late 20-year-old, early 30-year-old, you know, that's a big deal.
They don't like that when you miss those.
No, it was not good. And so she agrees to be going. And then she, you know, I get tickets. It's 2 weeks, a week before we're supposed to go. She's like, no, I don't want you to go. It's like, it's too late. I have to go, you know? So I do the dates with the understanding that I'm going to quit music. I could be done. You know, I've done what I need to do. I don't have to do, this would be a great ending for me going and playing Slayer at these festivals and headlining a German festival. And I never toured Europe before. So this would be a great send off for me. I could be honestly happy retiring after this. And then, so that was the idea. I go and do it. I come home, the marriage just collapses. And so it's just like, all right, well, I moved back to my parents' house and I'm just like, I can be a musician now. You know, there's no reason for me not to be and pursue more stuff with violence. Machine Head was still looking for a guitar player. It was such a cohesive run with them. And I think I injected some new life into what their situation was and coming off, you know, what was perceived as a letdown record, but they were still, you know, selling out these huge places. And so it was a good time for me to join that band and put an end to one life and start another.
Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly sounds like the timing worked out for you. Not that a marriage ending is a well-timed thing anytime, but as far as Machine Head being in your life at that time, do you think that Adam playing with you helped cultivate that relationship too? Because I know it's kind of like multifaceted between, you know, three different people.
Yeah, you know, I think that we all hit it off. Me and Dave had hit it off when I was there, big sport nut. So we got to, you know, we had a lot in common. It was just a good vibe. While my 2 weeks that I spent with them was really positive and they dug what I was playing and me and Adam spending time, but we had been snowboarding together for a bit at that point anyway. So we had been hanging out and I think it was just a natural next thing for them and for me to, like, here we are at this point in our life to make something happen. So I was coexisting, doing some violent stuff at this point. And it was later in 2002 where I was learning their songs and these are the songs that are going to be on Ashes, you know? So I've got the demos of all these songs and there is different forms of, like, Descend the Shades of Night was different. And there was a song called, what was the song called? It was their EPK. Is that what they were called? The Electronic Press Kit?
Yeah.
So there was a song, what was it called? He ended up using it for Roadrunner United.
Pins and Needles.
Pins and Needles. I don't know. Pins and Needles. Where are these guys going with the songs? Because there's heavier tunes like All Falls Down was on there. It was so, you know, so they're running. There's this whole spectrum of these songs in their early stages, late 2002, that I'm kind of learning and culling through as I'm working construction at the time, you know. So I've got this mini CD player on my scaffold. I've got a rolly fold because I was a door installer, you know. So I'm going to, you know, listening to Machine Head as I'm installing doors and being a carpenter, you know. And like, so as violence is, I was going to write a new violence record at that point in 2002. The plan was to do that. And as we're getting closer to the end of the year, or was it the end of that year? I forget when we recorded. Maybe in 2003. But as we're getting closer, there was a big deal about me doing this violence record. You know, even though it was agreed upon that, hey, I'm joining the band, but I'm going to do this violence record too. I've kind of promised the fans and myself that it was something that, and the band, you know, me and Perry have been writing and Sean have been writing, this is what we were going to do. And as we were getting closer to, you know, Ashes being done and I'm with them, I think that like 75% of the record was done before I joined, but there was this period when I'm there for Imperium. Dave had the riff for Imperium, and I think it was called it was called ba-da-da-da for the longest time, and then Rob wrote the intro with the banner. And so for that, and like Days Turn Blue to Gray was there for that. I brought a couple of Torque riffs, which became In the Presence of My Enemies. Finalizing all the other tunes. What was one of the last songs that we wrote? I think that those were like the three later ones that kind of got finished after I was there. But then, like, I digress. So we get to this Violence record, and I remember driving home from snowboarding and Rob calling me and like going, hey, you know, you're not going to do the Violence record. It's like, what? You know, we agreed on this before, you know, and it was a big deal. I remember we're screaming at him.
He hadn't seen Some Kind of Monster. He doesn't know how this ends.
Yeah, right. So I'm just screaming at him. I got a car full of my snowboard buddies, but I didn't give a fuck at the time. It's just like, man, this is not what we agreed on. And this is the band that I've wanted to be in since he started it. You know, it's like I've always been a Machine Head fan. I always watched what they did and loved what they were doing. And it's what I wanted to do. You know, I mean, I knew that Violence was going to be side thing or what it was. This was like my future, so I knew that I had to acquiesce and did. But he was going to hear about it, you know, that like. And so we move on to, you know, recording and starting to get in the studio for Ashes. We have the songs. I don't think that there was anything. I think Pins and Needles got scrapped because we had written other stronger stuff. I don't think that they had written that just as a single for radio, like that was for the Disturbed label and all the labels that wanted a single, you know, that and unbeknownst to me for a while, and maybe that was just my ignorance is bliss kind of blinders that I had in the band, was just like they didn't have a deal. There was no deal. You know, there's no label yet. There was talks, but there was no, we're going in to record. And it didn't matter to me. I didn't care. I was going to be in a band. I was going to be in the band I wanted to be in. And, you know, the music was awesome and I was excited to record and going in with the dude. So I just kind of had that mentality for pretty much my Machine Head career. You guys are handling it. I'm going to do this. I don't care what gets spent on what, if I, you know, got what I need or whatever. So that's it. Then we're moving into Sharkbite Studios in Oakland to record this record.
Well, you mentioned some things that I think are important to touch on. First of all, you mentioned snowboarding a lot. You were doing a lot of snowboarding, but, you mentioned that you were a fan of the band up until then. So I think it's important for the story of Through the Ashes is really two different things. It's one, like you said, that they got off, they meaning you, Machine Head, got off Roadrunner, and then the album ends up coming out on Roadrunner, which is funny. But also it's the bridge in between Supercharger and The Blackening, and really the response to Supercharger. So as a fan of the band, even objectively, not even a member, what did you think about Supercharger? I mean, I know you're playing these songs and stuff when you're doing the run with them in 2002, so you're intimately familiar with them. I know that's like, and let me also, this isn't baiting you, because I'm a Supercharger apologist. It's one of my favorite records, so I'm not trying to get you to say anything bad about it. If you like it, that's cool. If you don't, that's cool. But what did you think about Supercharger, and what were you thinking about what needed to be done or what you could contribute to move forward from it?
Well, Supercharger, we were both recording. Technocracy was recording upstairs at, there were rehearsal studios, but we had the Pro Tools rig, you know, so we were recording our record upstairs from where Machine Head rehearsed. And so they had finished their record, and I remember Rob coming, bringing it up and playing it on our system up in our studio. And I remember liking parts of it when I heard it initially. You know, Bulldozer is a great tune, you know, and there was parts that I really liked. There's a lot of like I said, man, this is, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. It's still a weird time for music. And you could tell that there was some stuff vocally happening. And when I finally did hear the record, it was to learn the songs that I might be doing for the run. So White Knuckle Blackout and some of the parts were, I didn't really know what nu metal was at that point, you know? I had been out of the music scene for probably 5 years or so, and I didn't know what nu metal was. I just knew I was listening to the radio. So I was listening to Incubus, and I love Stabbing Westward, and I love, you know, the radio bands. And so hearing that record, it wasn't the every song record for me, which was a first. You know, I was skipping songs to get to other songs. And it was the first time I loved the Burning Red. You know, I loved the Burning Red. I thought when that came out, it was fucking great. But like I said, I didn't know it's nu metal or he's rapping or whatever. You know, I love the conviction that I heard from him in those songs. You know, I didn't give a fuck about the rapping. I love Rage Against the Machine. And I love, you know, I was able to just separate. It's just music to me at this point. But the record is my least favorite. It has skippable songs. It's got great parts. You know, it's got Deafening Silence is great. Trepanation's a cool song. But like a lot of the in-between songs, I really can't. They would say, hey, let's try it. It's like, fuck, I don't know what that song is. You know, it's like, it was kind of forgettable for me, other than the big hits, which is, it's okay. It happens with a lot of my favorite bands. You know, there's a lot of forgettable films. Stuff.
Well, I'm glad you like the Burning Red, because the Burning Red's one of my favorite albums of all time. So that's a good base point to start on. But I guess I bring that up mainly because listening to Through the Ashes of Empires, it's obviously moving away from that quote unquote nu metal sound, although we didn't call it that back then yet. That was after it was dead, is when we called it nu metal to like disparage it. But during the time it was just metal. Like Machine Head was just called a metal band. Like it wasn't you mentioned Steve from Skin Lab. Like Skin Lab was metal, but if you listen to it now, it's like, oh, it's like got the essences of nu metal.
Yeah.
But Through the Ashes of Empires has those songs like Imperium, of course, which is kind of probably what the album's most known for, where it's moving towards that more true quote unquote metal sound that the Blackening embodies. But there's songs on Through the Ashes of Empires that wouldn't have sounded out of place on Supercharger, like Bite the Bullet or Elegies. And I'm not saying that in a negative way either, because I like Supercharger. In fact, I wish that maybe we could take some of the Supercharger songs out and throw those in. But, you know, they have those elements of it, so...
What's the... Wipe the tears.
Yeah.
Right. So that one could be on Supercharger. And I think that was kind of written earlier. I think those songs you mentioned, like Elegies, Wipe the Tears, All Falls Down, you know, those songs are written. Those were more on the Supercharger side of things. And then the later stuff, like you said, like the Imperiums and the Presence and
Blue to Gray. We got that.
It's from Blue to Gray. That was a later song. Yeah.
So, and that's kind of the point that I wanted to make, is that I know you're saying that the record is, you know, significantly done by the time you come in, but you also mentioned, you know, you kind of brought some new life into the band. And I think it might be more than you even realize, because the songs they were making before you're there, I'm not saying that you are the right deciding factor, but the songs they make before you're there sound like the songs they were making before. And then you come in, and whether it's because of you or not, they end up morphing towards more what Machine Head would become, with the Blackening and what's the one with Killers and Kings on it? What am I thinking of? Bloodstone and Diamonds. So I think this is like the first step towards it. And I think that it gets over emphasized how much of a departure from Supercharger it is, because it's really not that much of one, but Supercharger was so polarizing at the time that people kind of just remember Imperium and that stuff.
Yeah. It's the much maligned Supercharger. I don't get it either. I mean, it wasn't a horrible record. It wasn't their best, but it was still had some bangers on there. But you're right. I think that there came a time. Every time I say that, I think of We Are the World. But there comes a time when you heed a certain call.
When we heed a certain call, when the world must.
They had a meeting where they were kind of just like, I'm over the EPKs, I'm over the radio hits. I think that like McLean had the not really an epiphany where it's just like, I just want to be a metal band. I just want to write the, you know, that. And I think that was a cognizant effort on theirs maybe before I joined or right when I joined. I think that there was like this correlation of, hey, Jim will join. He's from Violence. He brought the heavy back, you know, which wasn't the case at all. These guys had made that effort before I did. I get entirely too much credit for, you know, all of that.
Well, I'm saying you're not getting enough credit before you
come. That's what I mean.
Before you come in, they're Supercharger on steroids, which is, I guess, even more charged. But, you know, you mentioned In the Presence of My Enemies. So that was originally a Torx song, right? You kind of brought that over from Torx.
It was. It was a song called Empty that me and Mark Hernandez had written out the boom, 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 the whole part with that. The verse riff, Rob just turned it upside down. I had it going one way. He turned it another way. He has a habit of doing that, like taking a riff and it's like, oh, well, let's just play it backwards. And like he later told me that Blood for Blood was an old riff that I had written in Violence that I had kind of scrapped while we were together. And he kind of saved it and just kind of turned the notes backwards. Better. You know, he's all, I just turned them upside down and it's, all right, well, yeah, okay.
That's efficient. So,
yeah, In the Presence was my riffs to begin. And that was kind of like how Rob and I worked was I would bring a couple of ideas together and then he would like, okay, now I'll build a song around it or I'll add, you know, on this record, Seasons Wither was the same way. Had a couple of riffs and, you know, it was after I joined. Actually, Seasons Wither has a Torque riff in it too that I kind of changed. But he took a couple of those and structured this epic song around, you know, a couple of riffs that I had written. So, which unfortunately, the reissue vinyl, I just pulled it out and was going through and they left my writing credit off of fucking Seasons Wither on. It's kind of fucked up.
That is only because, I mean, I'm not going to say it's anything, but it is like known that that's like if any song you wrote on that record, it's that one because it's after all the other songs.
Yeah. So it was kind of, I received word back that it was an oversight that, you know, it was just something got lost in whatever. It happened. What can you do?
Now, In the Presence of My Enemies, and even kind of Seasons Wither have somewhat of a, almost like an industrial feel to them, which Machine Head always had, like just that little tinge of it. But do you think that your work with this Technocracy band was kind of influencing that as well? I know you're saying that it was a Torque song, but.
You know, Rob was always into industrial bands. You know, he wanted to join Ministry after Violence, you know, and was always into that type of stuff. And I think even the name he got was kind of like as this industrial, you know, it's more industrial than a fucking machine, you know? So it's, I think he always had that with him, but there has been a robbery of Technocracy riffs for Machine Head in clinching. There was a straight up jack from a Technocracy song, that was directly lifted from a Technocracy song. And that song was called How We Die. And when we were doing Bloodstone, Rob he was calling Now We Die. It was called How We Die.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
So straight lifted from Technocracy, but he changed it to Now We Die. But yeah, there's borrowing and every band does it.
Well, I mean, it's you're borrowing from yourself too. I mean, I think that's more than allowed. I think that you can do that.
Sure. Absolutely.
In the presence of my enemies also randomly has like two lines from Jamie Josta. Were you there when he's like, he yells two sentences on that song? I don't know why. And he doesn't have any credit on there either, but it's 100% him. I'm positive.
Are you sure?
It's, yeah. Well, unless it's you doing a Hatebreed impression.
No, it's not Josta.
You got to hear it. You should pull it up right now. It's
oh, you would have known. I'm gonna say myth.
Okay. Myth. All right. I'm excited. Well, you know what? I'm excited to dig into that because it's
throw it out on the internet. That's Josta. I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, when I do want you to listen to it. I want you to tell me who it is because it's not Robert Flynn for sure.
Absolutely. It's not Robert Flynn. It might have been Rob Flynn at that point. I think he's back to Rob Flynn on that record.
Okay. So. And where does that extra B come from? Do we know that?
He got the extra B right before Violence signed or we were doing our record. He was Rob with one B before Violence. And he added a B before the Violence. I don't know. It's like... It's cool.
It's sick. Everything is sick. I like everything.
Then he lost it for a minute and then he got it back.
That's the full circle. That's growth. That's what that is.
Yeah. It is growth.
Well, you mentioned, with Technocracy too, that, Pro Tools and things like that were new. I was going to ask you, was recording Through the Ashes the first time you had recorded with Pro Tools, but I guess not because you had done it with Technocracy.
Did it with Technocracy. Mark Keaton. At Sharkbite Studios, super cool guy. The recording was awesome. David did his tracks super quick. I would be practicing while Rob was tracking in the vocal booth. I had my Technocracy rig and I'd be practicing along, warming up. And I knew the tunes. I think it's the record is pretty clear that it doesn't take me that long to learn songs. So I had the songs. It was just a matter of me getting them down. We recorded all the tracks on an ESP guitar that Rob had. It was, I always forget what it was, but it was a baritone. And I was used to playing my Vs on standard scale. So after Rob was done tracking or doing some vocals or whatever, I come in and do my tracks. I recorded every song, two tracks. I would change the strings. And it takes me back to that Stabbing Westward record again, because every time I'd be changing the strings, I'd have that record on. So I knew where it's every time I hear this one song, it's like, oh, I'm usually on the B string by now, you know? And, cool. Yeah, it's a weird trigger like that. So I remember tracking for that. Some parts were difficult, and there's some like Them was a song we haven't talked about yet, but a song like Them has weird, so it has a weird time in it. You know, it has a weird timing in it. So it was a matter of, wasn't me. And granted, Rob is this phenomenal rhythm player and guitar player in general. And for me to match what he was playing, or me to match what anybody's playing, it's always going to be difficult for the second guy coming in. So there's like a learning curve and, oh, you mute this like this and that. But definitely played both tracks on that record. First notes you hear on the record are me. There was a Rob would pick them, those notes, and I would finger pick them so he could hear both notes. And so I always thought that he was really true with, like, because he comes in with the string pop, you know, so he wanted it to be true, the parts that we were playing. But going through those tunes and sitting with Mark and playing that baritone Strat, I can't play Strat. So it was like this huge learning curve for me to get through these tracks. And some parts that he would do, because he just played them better for the sake of timing, you know, would play them better. But that at that point and on that record and subsequent some other recordings leading up to the Blackening, that, you know, I played all the guitars on that record on my side.
Well, and then Vim, I mean, you're talking about it has those crazy rhythms, but then the lead in Vim is insane too.
It's like, I don't.
I mean, it could be, some guitar players could have a whole career off the lead in Vim. It's like it goes through three different movements, and you're just like, we'll just do it over this minute and a half of this song.
The recording the solos on that was definitely where I knew that I would make my mark, and having there was just some magical moments in those. You know, the In the Presence is the most epic lead. It's really, there's a lot of room, and I had some magical little bendy parts and harmonic dives that were really cool. In those days, I was kind of piecing some solos together. But maybe the crown jewel for my solos on that record was the Descend of the Shades of Night solo. And I remember we had a friend over, and it's I remember to this day, he was like, I got goosebumps, bro. He's all, motherfucker's gonna be weeping and shit when they hear that. You know, just it's an emotional solo, and it was really it was open because the part was so good to solo over. You know, it had this great sweeping part to be able to throw these notes over, and so I'm proud of what I played solo wise on that. And I think that it really it was different than what they had before. You know, Ru wasn't a really soloist in that vein. Logan played solos, and what was so cool about Logan was that he had this, his own style, you know, and his solos were really memorable and not, I don't want to say odd or strange note selections, but they were just different, you know, and they fit really fucking cool. So Rob was always really adamant about, you know, hey, play solos how they are on the record. People want to hear that. And, you know, and I tried a lot of the time, but there's just some parts of his that I couldn't do. I couldn't rap myself. I couldn't do. Logan wrote some cool shit that was hard for me to play. And so being able to bring that part into Machine Head was, I think it was landmark for the band, you know, at that point, because they hadn't really had that at the point. I mean, Rob's, you know, ripping leads, and, you know, we have different styles. Rob's uses the wah a lot. He has his stuff that he does. And, you know, again, I just thought I brought something different in that vein. And when I had met Dimebag for the first time in, I think, 89, when he's still Diamond Darrell. Oh, wow. And I met him at a Foundations Forum. Was a convention for rock and metal down in LA, and it was just an excuse for everybody to go down and get drunk and hang out. And I had seen Pantera when we played. I didn't see the band, but I'd seen in Dallas when we came through with Testament in 1988, all this stuff about Pantera, you know, they looked like Van Halen, you know, they had. And so when the Cowboys came out, no, I'd seen what you guys were, you just in with the hairspray and the spandex and everything, you know, it's cool, but you don't just get to be a thrash band. You know, I was from SF Bay Area at that point, and we took it seriously about, you don't just get to decide I'm going to be a thrash band. And, you know, so it took me a minute to hop on that. But Daryl was he was cool. When I met him, I said, hey, you know, Phil from Violence. And he was like, oh, right on. And met Phil, and they'd always sing the Serial Killer lyrics back to me. And so meeting Daryl, then I hadn't seen him since 89. So it'd been 13 years when I was 14 years, I saw him at Download, and they pour themselves out of it's Damage Plan at Download Festival. They're going on because Slayer missed. And so they're going on the main stage and they're all hammered, you know, and Daryl comes up, gives me a big head. He's all, Fanugi. He called me Fanugi, the fucking new guy, you know. And he's all, you brought the shred to Machine Head, bro. The new record is great. I love what you did. And, you know, I've got goosebumps right now thinking about Dimebag giving me those props. I never played Download before. Here I am about to play at this, you know, crazy festival. Dimebag Darrell's giving me a hug and saying how good I am. And it was a moment I'll never forget, you know. So even with Darrell, it stuck with him that, you know, I had brought something that hadn't been in that band before.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an incredible story. So cool to go full circle from one point to the other with them. But
got there.
but you also bring up a good point about the lead style, because Logan had that very unorthodox approach to it, but kind of fit with the you know, kind of at the time unorthodox rhythms that Machine had. And then Aru was very much more like locked into the rhythm of the song. And then you have that, you kind of going all the way back to what you were talking about with Sepultura, you had that more classic, like timeless approach to a lead. You know, those leads can sound perfect on any kind of song, whereas maybe the other leads, they'd had to be on that Machine Head song. You know what I mean? You kind of brought that more classic style to that, which Machine Head at that time is also going in a more traditional metal style too. So it all, I think, came together exactly the way it should have, which is cool.
It did. Yeah, I think that me and Rob kind of pushed each other, and that's not really pushed each other, but it just like, it gave him somebody to kind of push him in maybe a writing sense of being able to do some of these harmony stuff, some of this harmony stuff that would come on the next record. And, you know, to where it pushed him to, oh, we could do this stuff now. And this is, has this other, there's another area where I can grow as a guitar player as well. And, you know, I think that what I brought maybe the most to the band that I'm most proud of doing was at the live show, was with watching them before, phenomenal live band, but it always seemed like four dudes doing their own thing. You know, there's three guys up front just doing their own thing. And from watching, especially like in the late 90s and watching a local band, but watching Death Angel as much as I did, I really was inspired by the way that Rob and Mark, the singer, like vibe together. And they like, you could tell that they were fucking feeling it, you know? And I wanted that. I wanted to feel everything we were doing, because I wanted it to be fucking real. You know, I wanted the people watching that to be able to feel what I was watching when I saw Death Angel doing that and going, fuck, that is, you know, that's real. I'm feeling that. So I approached the dudes and was just like, hey, there's parts, or I don't want it to be choreographed, but I want it to be, you know, feel free to like, if there's a part to like, get out your bubble and, you know, let's move around and hook up on some of these parts. So I think that they really took it to heart and, you know, developed that part of the show, and it kind of broke it up. And I think that it really helped in a reciprocal sense with the audience to go like, oh, okay, well, these guys are feeling, you know. So it's, I think that's my most proud thing. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but that is what I'm most proud of bringing to the Machine Head.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think that that's it's an important part of, like you said, a live show, because then the audience feels that, whether they realize it or not, whether it's a conscious thing, they know that if you're having a good time and you're feeling it, then I can't help but be involved. So I think that's very sick. When you're recording the album and you're recording the leads and you're doing the rhythms with Rob, and I know that the songs, like you said, kind of went through different transformations. Are you guys collaborating over like vocal patterns or lyrics or anything like that? Or is that just kind of Rob's thing individually? I know that you had just come from, not just come from, that's not fair to say, but earlier had been doing a front man of Torque. And I know mm-hmm. that Adam had like contributed to lyrics and stuff like that in the past. So is that a collaborative effort with this record, or is it more
just Rob? Now, at this point, I think that he had a lot of it done already, and he was shouldering that, or maybe having Adam help. I don't think I helped with any lyrics on that record. The Blacking Gang, he sought and welcomed my help in that sense. But at that point, no, him and Mark were kind of going over vocal stuff. I was there for a lot of the vocals because I was, you know, working on my rhythm stuff, but I don't remember me having a lot of input on that record at that point. Rob was, this is the first one where he was producing it.
Oh, right.
So he was as always 100% immersed in the project, you know, And I don't remember me being helping in any of that department other than just kind of my solos.
Yeah, that's actually a great point that I completely didn't bring up, is that Rob is the producer for this record probably a couple of reasons, but mainly, like you mentioned before, Machine Head are in between deals. So there's not really a budget for a producer to get, you know.
Yeah, I can see it from hindsight going, oh, that's why but I think that he wanted to do that because nobody knows what this band should sound like more than him, you know, and I don't think that having somebody in the middle of that is, you know, Mark had great ideas. And I think that a lot of them were used and Rob welcomed that input as he's done over the records that he's produced with us. He's always been open to, you know, he has a vision, but he's open to, you know, other ideas. And so he was, I don't know. I don't remember him being, he was really adamant about wanting the guitars to be real tight, but I mean, he was always that way. So, I thought he was great to work with in that sense. He had great ideas and always had great musical ideas and had a great ear for all of that.
And Andy Sneap did some like pre-production with you guys also. Is that right?
I think so. I don't know. I was working, you know, I had a job for a while in the band.
You mean a job outside of the band?
Yeah, outside of the band. So I would go to work, a union carpenter, and go from work to, there's probably a lot of the recording. I'm there in my steel toes and my, you know, my Carhartts and tracking. So it's a lot of the stuff. Like I said, I had my ignorance is bliss goggles on and, you know, show me where to go, point and shoot, you know? So I think that the Sneak did kind of maybe come in and dial in some drums or something, but I just read. I don't remember that though.
That's actually badass though, especially coming from your starting Torque. You're trying to get that off the ground with, you know, Mascot. You go back, you're like, oh, I guess this isn't going to work out. You do the 2 weeks you think is going to be like your farewell run. You're still doing this, you know, hard manual labor job. And then of course we know how the story ends where you end up being in the band and that becomes your career. So that's actually really sick that you're like going to your, I mean, I'm sure it didn't seem sick at the time.
Well, I honestly couldn't quit the job until 2011 was when I was able to quit construction.
You could just get time off for touring and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'd get time off. And so I had carved my niche in the industry to be a superintendent for a company that the guy really valued me and didn't want to lose me. So he was able to, you know, give me time. And they liked it anyways. Oh, yeah, our guys are offering blah, blah, blah. They're out of, you know. So it was kind of a novelty for them to have too, but you know, it took me a bit. I think that the guitars, my signature deal with Jackson took off to the point to where I was able to, okay, now I can be a musician, you know, and that was a really good time. You know, there's a point where I was going from Machine Head rehearsal to Technocracy rehearsal to Violence rehearsal, all in the same fucking building.
Wow.
I've worked hard, man. You know, even now there was a time last summer, maybe two summers ago, when I had 175 songs that I needed to be able to play. Strapping Young Lad, Metal Allegiance, Lamb of God, Testament. I had all these sets that I needed to be ready to go for. I welcome it as a challenge, you know, and being able to, this has been, I used to throw Kiss concerts. I owned the house that I grew up in. So right outside here, we had a pool. And in the mid 70s, I'd put on the makeup and play tennis rackets and have smoke bombs going off and the Kiss record on the turntable. And as a finale, we'd jump in the pool. This is what I've always wanted to do, and I have a chance to be able to do it. And I will never take that for granted.
No, so much respect for that. And you're not afraid to work hard, like you said. I mean, and that's from the beginning. You stated at the beginning that you're known for being able to learn songs quickly. I mean, that's, I'm sure helped you get some jobs.
It did. I think that the whole Slayer thing, it's becoming kind of an urban legend. I learned 75 songs in 2 hours, and you know, it's grown to epic proportions, but it's, you know, I think that people have been impressed by my ability to be able to retain and learn, you know, material. And that's just made me a better player in general, learning all those bands that I just named off. You know, it's just like all in different tunings and all in different, you know, styles. And it's just made me such a better player.
You do the recording of the album. We know, of course, that the album ends up coming out on Roadrunner. It's titled Through the Ashes of Empires. You're telling me that, you know, you're kind of blinders on. You got a job to do. You're recording guitars. You're probably not super, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're not super involved in picking cover art or naming albums and things like that, I would imagine.
Not really. Yeah. I'm included in ideas, but I just want to kind of like, I don't want to be the, like, I remember not wanting to call it Through the Ashes of Empires. I wanted to call it Through Ashes of Empires. I didn't think it needed the, you know, through the, you know, of, I just from a grammar standpoint. But yeah, I was always kept abreast of things that were happening with, even with t-shirt designs, to the point where it's just like, hey, I don't need to be involved with t-shirt stuff. You've got a better eye grip on that. But you know, I was kept in the loop of all those things.
Well, that's cool. I mean, you know, because like we mentioned before, it's a band, so you want everyone to be involved. But I just didn't know how much you were even interested in that kind of stuff, I guess, because of the fact that you were mentioning that.
Yeah, we were a band. That's what I joined, was the concept of that, and knowing that, you know, we were four dudes with a leader, but that we were all invested in that sense. And my involvement was just, you know, it's been a long time since, and I've never been in a band of that level, of that magnitude before. So I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want to, you know, just stick to what I know. And if I don't know enough about it, then don't say anything.
And you know, who we really haven't talked about enough is Dave McLean and his contributions to this record, because he's actually like a riffer on here too, right? He like has some songwriting involvement.
Unsung hero of this record for sure. Yeah, like I said, he wrote the Imperium verse riff. You know, that's him. He wrote Elegy. I think he wrote part of Descend the Shades of Night. Descend was so changed. It was so weird. Not weird. It was cool. I liked it. It was just different. I don't know. I think those demos are out. The demos of Descend the Shades of Night in its first incantation or whatever are out. So you can hear the difference. And I think that Dave had, you know, he contributed a lot. I think the beginning of Vim, I would always do, you know, this is what we play for Vim, because let's do this one.
That sick stomp in the presence of my enemies, that like stomp beat that he has kind of going. That's like,
He's, you know, McLean, amazing drummer, amazing human, good dude. Yeah. Great guitar player too. He's got a great musical sense too. You know, he's got good tremolo when he plays, and got a good ear for notes. And I'll ask him a lot of times about like some certain covers. I play a shit ton of covers, and I'll ask him about, you know, is it this, or he's like, no, I think it's one more, or, you know, he's got a great ear for musical sense.
Yeah. That always drives me crazy when drummers are good at other things too, you know? Was there a song on the album that you wanted to be a single instead of Imperium?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, that was the tune. I mean, it's the album opener. We all knew that it turned into this epic. It's got all the elements, you know, the the soft beginning. It's got the thrashy middle. I don't think there's a solo in that song, which is great that it didn't need one. You know, it's got the the Sepultura. So, no, I think that we were all on board with that. I think that there was maybe talk of All Falls Down, which I think is just like one of the better deep cuts on that record. I always love playing it. You know, there's so much conviction in his singing in that song, too. It was fucking cool.
No, that song was awesome. I mean, the record start to finish, there's no like weak tracks. There's Imperium is obviously just like the song, like it just can't help but be. But start to finish, there's nothing. And I like that there are the shorter songs, kind of like the ones I mentioned before, Bite the Bullet, Elegies, that you know make it feel less daunting. You know,
so take me through the record. So it's Imperium, it's Bite the Bullet,
Left Unfinished with that music box intro,
and that had. It's got the 10-ton hammer tuning in it. Rob's great with tunings and creating these tunings. So it had the third string is tuned up a half step. So people always try to get that 10-ton hammer harmonic, you know, and yeah. Can't quite get it. So it's just like, well, they don't know to tune that string up, you know. It's pretty brilliant. But that song had round and out. You know, this cool little Sliding Park. Great song. Love the Left Unfinished too.
Descend?
Yeah, crazy. I remember Rob's idea of bringing the acoustics in for Descend, and it was a whole thing about like, we had a Mark Workman, our TM, was because we're taking acoustics on the road with us, right? And from a logistics standpoint, it was just, you know, with stands and, you know, DIs and all this stuff. And he's Mark Workman. What would Kerry King think or say if he saw you with acoustic guitars on this stage, you know, and like this song is going to be, you know, he was just downplaying this song and I liked it, man. You know, I didn't think that anybody would give a shit. It was a great fucking tune. And it brought him a mood to the show that it didn't have really before, you know, and it brought this cool thought of talking about death. And, you know, it's Descent is a fucking great song. Him and Adam singing together on that tune is fucking great. You know, it's got this one of my favorite solos going into that, just the melody that Rob wrote at the end of the heart, into more harmonies. And it's fucking an epic song, man. It's so fucking good. I can't remember. It was Download where we're like, it's been pissing rain, you know, Soil opened the show and I got pissed on and their pedal board is just, and we're playing the show Rock 'em Ring and inside this racetrack in Germany. It's a typical German day, just pissing rain. And we go to play that song and the fucking the sun peeks out. And it was magical, man. It was fucking so cool. When I found out that my dad died the day that we got nominated for a Grammy, and we were playing in Italy, and I had like some pass out spells like earlier, like 10 years prior, and like I got a real low heart rate. So sometimes my vasovagal nerve kind of malfunctions and the adrenaline doesn't shoot in when it's supposed to. And I would think of him during the song and it's as Rob would say, a 10 minute lamentation on death, a lamentation, but he would say lamentation. So we're like, dude, it's a lamentation and about, you know, death and dying and loss. And so I would think of him during this song towards the end, and we're playing the song and I fucking pass out on stage, you know, and I wake up and it's like, oh, the fuck, that hasn't happened in a while or whatever. And wake up the next morning and my sister had called and said that my dad had passed away, and Dave McLean was just like, bro, what time did it happen, you know? And he was pretty adamant, and I'm in my processing, I'm not thinking about it, but he's what time? And then I'm doing the time because he had he was diabetic, so he's in dialysis. And so I said, well, he gets out of his, what happened was he got out of dialysis and he went to, went in the car and he put the keys on the dashboard and he just left. He just went to sleep and just died right there in the parking lot. And so we found out what time he got out of dialysis and blah, blah, blah. And blah, and so we pretty much put it together that the time that I was passing out on stage in Italy was the time that my dad was passing away. So pretty fucking heavy thing. And I'll always be tied to that song because of that. So in everything that has happened throughout this band, you know, it didn't end well, or it, you know, it didn't end horrible. It didn't end amazing, but you know, for everything that happened in the, you know, 15 years after that or whatever, I've been so, I don't want to say blessed because everybody says blessed. I've been fucking lucky and fortunate to have this path that this band, to have my, that section, I've had like four lifetimes in my life. I've been, you know, but that section was so fucking cool and adventurous and mind-blowing at times and creative and incredible. And it all started right there. This is the genesis of that, of all of that. And I wouldn't change a fucking thing, man. I thank them. I thank the band for having me part of that and giving me that section of my life.
And that is our show. Thanks so much to Phil for joining us, and thank you for listening. As a reminder, you could have heard this early on patreon.com/meetmeetpod. Go there to support the show. And in the meantime, share this episode with every single person you've ever met. Go on Craigslist Misconnections. Find that person in the grocery store who you locked eyes with for just a second longer than normal and let them know Phil Demmel was talking on Meet Meep to Ryan Rainbow from HBO about Through the Ashes of Empires 2003 or 2004's Machine Head album. In the meantime, my name is Ryan Rainbow. This is Meet Meep. And yes, that's the best that I could come up with. Bye.